Time to over. This is Channel 2 over. Continuation of the talk with Suzanne on Tuesday, 2nd December, 6 to 9. Tuesday, 2nd December, 6 to 9. Channel 2 over. Channel 2 over. Continuation of the talk with Suzanne. Barbara's here on Tuesday, the afternoon, the 2nd December, 6 to 9. I said, all right, now gather up, pin down their interests.
You see, they're not interested in wildlife, except unless they tie it to hunting.
Yeah. Go out of his way to read a book on wildlife just to learn about it, I don't think.
No.
Down here, read it.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to say what his father's interested in particularly, because he likes to fiddle around, but mostly he likes just to kind of relax on the weekend, which usually isn't doing much. He likes to build things, but that's just off and on. On the weekends, mostly he listens to the music, except this last time, because there's so much else. He had a toothache, which didn't help matters. Your music, isn't near as enjoying to Nell. Nell doesn't listen to it very much. Unless, just to go in and listen to it like he will. She's, she told me that, Bew has always considered the fact that her home and her children are enough for her to be interested in. And she said he kind of frowns on her going out and doing other things, like, say, a bridge group or something like that. And he's never been much of a person for dancing or parties or anything like that. He likes to come, when he gets through working all week, and it's pretty hard work, most of it, he likes just to kind of sit around instead of going out and doing things. And she says that he's had this view of her, that the home and children are plenty to fill her life. Well, now that they've only got one girl at home, so she's taken up working with the girls' auxiliary and church groups just to kind of broaden her interest outside the house. Because she's been interested in other things, it's just that she's done kind of like he wanted and not gone into other things, just mostly stayed with the house.
Well, in a way, she might be more venturesome than he is.
Definitely, I think so.
That'd
be pretty normal, because if you consider that she was married when she was 16 and had the first daughter probably a year or two after. That's been her entire life tied to the house and the children. And I think almost any person has interest, you know, or used to have interest outside this housework and family. And when you don't get to go out and do them, well, then you put them off until, like, now she's trying to go out and do other things. Like, she'd probably been much more happy. Of course, they had friends and that they'd go visit and all. But she'd probably like to dance and join different kinds of clubs and stuff like that.
But he discouraged it.
Yeah. Because he felt like the family was enough.
Well, is that Western music, then he associated with that world of just staying with the family.
Yeah. His family, it's very important to him. The whole family is very affectionate toward each other.
Mm-hmm.
And like Jim told me, he got kind of mad at me one time because I fixed supper on the coffee table, you know, instead of making him clear all his papers off the kitchen table. Well, he wasn't mad about it. He just wasn't too happy about it because he said dinner is a family affair. I said, but there's only two of us, you know. And he says, that doesn't matter. You have to form good habits right from the beginning. And he says, dinner is everybody eats together, and that's time of day where you get together and talk about things. And this is very important to them. And they have, I have never been there where they just ate, you know, in the kitchen. I mean, in the living room. Except dessert. It's always at the table.
And they do talk about
oh,
things?
Yeah.
Such as?
Well, mostly just about Barbara, Betty, you know, letters. But sometimes they'll talk on, say, attacks or roads or something like that outside the family. Like he reads the paper regularly, and they'll talk about, well, one time it came out about law enforcement. Well, it started out with some murders that had happened in Ogallie, and from there, of course, it went to law enforcement and why people are, why these kind of things happen or seem to happen more than they used to, and what kind of person does it.
Yeah,
and it goes on like that. And
when all they knew about it is what they read in the paper.
Yeah, basically. Sometimes they know lots of people around there. They know lots of families, and so they, a lot of times they can associate what happens with a family, like a car wreck or something like that. They'll know other people who were involved. And of course his father tells jokes, you know, that he heard them. Usually I've only heard him tell one dirty joke, and that was Thanksgiving Day. And he was so embarrassed for telling me, I got up and left the table, and his face was all red.
Why, really?
Yeah. What had happened, his brother-in-law had told one about two nuns, and I guess he felt, you know, like being older, he ought to get one in too. And so he told one, and his face turned red, and he got up and left the table. Went outside.
Was it really, Daddy?
Well, I didn't understand it. Jim had to explain it to me. Yeah, it was. But it's when Jim's, I didn't know why he turned to the red at first, except that, you know, everybody just howled when they heard it. So I didn't exactly understand it. So Jim told me later that he never tells jokes like that around the family. He said, you might tell it to his friends. He said, but he'd never say it around the family, and that's why he's embarrassed.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny.
Well, did they get it, or are they just interested in it because he told it?
Well, they got it. They all thought it's funny. It's about miniskirts, and somebody had heard one similar, you know. And I mean, they just howled. I never heard such jokes in my life at dinner tables, they told.
Yeah.
We were at his grandparents. And they got pretty rowdy for a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Cause
well,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
At dinner?
Well, sort of afterwards.
Sure.
Dessert.
But still around the table.
Yeah. See what happened? Bob told one. That's Jim's uncle, and he's about in his 30s. And so then his father told one, and then Bob, somebody else told, and then several of them told different jokes. Some more or less. Some were just regular jokes, and some were dirty jokes. And then Bob wanted his wife to tell one that she told him privately, and she said no, she wouldn't do it. She'd tell women, and he could tell men, but she didn't want to do it with both.
Is that right?
Yeah. So they went on about that for a while, and finally he convinced her, and she told it. And it was kind of funny. And it just broke up the table, and that's when everybody started. The men went back outside, and the women cleaned up the table and all.
She broke up.
She sure did.
Yeah.
It was kind of, it was pretty bad. But she turned red too, because she didn't want to tell it, men and women both.
Well, you know, that's a good, great bit of jollity, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
that's like an old fashioned Christmas.
Well, there were 16 people there at dinner.
That's good.
Uh-huh. And his grandmother had it. And everything, almost everything they had on the table, they'd raise themselves. and they
had grandmother.
Yeah. And
oh, had they?
Yeah. They had field peas and butter beans and mustard greens and turnip greens. And I didn't even get to eat everything they had on the table. And they had, instead of a turkey, they had one of their hens, baked hens. And then Jim and Nell brought a ham, and somebody else brought some rolls. And they had three pumpkin pies and three cakes, one fruit cake and two other kinds. But they all lined up on this table, you know, and passed everything around. It was just, you know, and they were laughing and joking about the food and all this kind of stuff.
They didn't use a buffet and then sit down.
No, they had a real long dining room table and put all the leaves in it. And then they brought out the kitchen table and put it right next to it. So they lined up down the living room, dining room.
And was it the grandparents that raised the vegetables?
Mm-hmm. They have a garden out in their backyard and some chickens, too. They keep the chickens till they quit laying eggs, and then they freeze them.
Mm-hmm.
But Jim was dying for collard greens. He loves them. And his grandmother hadn't fixed any, so she gave Nell a whole grocery sack full of collard greens to have when we got back home. But everything they had except a few things like tomatoes and they had some spice fruits like peaches and crab apples. Stuff like that they bought.
But the collard greens tasted good, fresh.
Yeah, normally I don't like them because they taste like broccoli, but these were pretty good. But they had mustard greens and turnip greens Thanksgiving, and we had collard greens back home with swamp cabbage, which Jim cut down. He went out in the woods and cut down a palm tree and brought it home. And they had swamp cabbage.
Can you cook?
I could if I could get hold of them fresh, but it's hard to find
them. How they cook them?
Yeah. She, the greens, well, first she washes them, of course, and then she gets a big pot.
Get the sand out of them.
Yeah, get the sand out. And then she gets a big pot and she just cooks them a long time, cooks them real slow so they'll stay tender. And she may cut them up before she puts them in, or I think she cuts them up afterwards, though. And she puts in some bacon fat, too, for flavor. But they're pretty good. Normally, I don't like vegetables at all.
Oh, really? Well, that looks like that little world holds together pretty well. I draw up the strands of it, that you associate with Western music down there.
Hmm. Well, wait a minute. I shall return. It's got all the sort of things that I sort of associate Western music with country. And country with big families. And the woman working in the house and the man doing the work in the field or in the office, as it is nowadays so often. But anyway, the woman keeps in her place. And a big family like that really just about is enough. When you got all those to tend to and all the relatives on holidays and...
Yeah.
And 16 to 25 people around the table at Christmas and Thanksgiving. And a close family. That close family. It ties together. I think it's all.
I'm not very good at drawing up strands.
He's writing a book. Like the storm winds blew and a little girl was wandering down the road and the next
door slammed, a
woman screamed. And the whole book he has a whole series of all these cliche openings, and then he stops, looks at his typewriter and he says, in the next part, I tie all this together.
I remember that one. Petersburg. Well, one thing is family. It's, I think one thing that I've noticed is, I guess you could call it informality, that you're one of a group, you're one of a kind, and we're all kind of together. Like in the commercials, the way they advertise for somebody or endorse something, they say they're mighty fine people. You take it from me. And this is why you should buy it, because they're good people. And it's that kind of attitude where they, like your buddies and your friends, just because you're of the same interest and the same background, and you enjoy the same kind of things, and they take it for granted. And so that's and they joke a lot, you know, the performers. And it's the kind of joking, this kind of horsing around, that people would do themselves just with their family, so that's part of what they like. It's it's close to their own background.
How do you mean they're horsing around like they're horsing around like their families would do themselves?
Well, like telling jokes that no, those jokes are kind of hard to put in because they're not. They'll kid each other and say, you know, like he's so fat, or we were at a barbecue, Jim and I, and they talked about one man they were kidding and on the loudspeaker and said he's gone back for 3 servings, and it's just a joke, you know, that everybody else might have gone back for seconds, but this guy went back for 3 when he's a real small man. You know.
Sure.
And that kind of thing where they kid each other and insult each other, but it's funny and they know that it's not meant.
Yeah.
Like that horse show where the announcer addressed some man outside who wasn't probably involved in some way, but talked to him like everybody knew him and just said something to him and everybody laughs, you know.
Ran him down.
Yeah, something. I forgot exactly what they say, or they said something to him, but on the assumption that everybody knows him, you know, and this is funny.
Well, now that going back to the 3rd servant wouldn't be an example of that.
Yeah.
You mean that sort of insult?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, making a hog of himself.
Yeah.
And so they joke about it out loud. Of course, he hadn't done it.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's joke, they're kidding me. Turn off a minute.
Yeah, I got to take it.
More mean them, but part of the insult is showing how much a friend you are. Like, in this little youth group I was in, you could tell how much one of the sponsors was liked by how much he was insulted. Like, the assistant minister used to come in, and all the kids were absolutely wild about him. I mean, they were crazy about him. He'd come, and they'd say, oh, boo, here's Bill Brown, you know, and boo him and cut him down about his voice. He had real hoarse voice and all. And insults, if they were serious, you know, that would really be insults. But as they were, it's just showing that you liked them. They weren't real insults.
And you get that on the country music program.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of it. They'll kid one of the singers about how big his hat is, or how he plays the fiddle, or how he plays the guitar, or how maybe he copies somebody else's songs, or just anything. And it's just, that's probably as much of the program as the singing, because it takes up about as much time. I do it constantly.
What?
Jim and I do the same thing constantly. It's to me, I got so used to it in high school that it's just part of my personality to joke around like that. And
in
he does.
High school.
Well, yeah.
You weren't associated with country music in high school.
No, it doesn't have to be with just country music. That, I mean, the joking, the insults like that. That's part of country music, but it's not limited to that. I don't think. In fact, I know it's not. God, it mostly was in the church. That youth group.
Well, is that the same group in the church as it has the country music?
I don't know. I'm trying to work that out now. I've been involved then.
To see it.
And now, I'm so uninvolved with it, I think it'd be just as hard to see it.
Can't get interested. Yeah.
Now, you could bring Billy Graham into it real easily, I think. That same thing, a revival.
Or make a stab.
Wait a second.
I heard him.
They are standard. All the times I've heard him speak, they're about the same. You know, he may change it a little bit, but they're almost always the same.
Are we going to get the Billy Graham crusade into the, associate that with country music and with the sort of formalized insult?
Well, it'd be harder to work the formalized insult than the country music part, because the crusade is just, to me, an outgrowth of the revival, which is just as country as it can be. I mean, I've always associated it, say, with the Methodist preachers who'd go around and they'd have a revival and they'd sing gospel music. And it's the same kind of music they sing on country western shows. I mean, they usually work in some gospel songs, and it's Going to Glory Land or Sweet and Precious Jesus and I've Been Saved. And they come right from the revivals. And the crusade is just part of that. In fact, I think even some of the songs are what they call, you know, let's have some good old gospel singing. And they do it. Though some of the songs are, say, from a Presbyterian hymnal, a little more reserved. But generally, reserved, I mean, in the music. It's not as fast, and it's more stately. But some of the music goes right back to, you know, what is it? Something, Meet You by the Riverside, or things like that. Four, I get tired of it. I used to like it. I liked it a lot. But then I was involved with the whole business, and I enjoyed it. And in fact, I had a lot of them memorized. I sing Amazing Grace and all sorts of songs. And I had them memorized by going. And I liked them.
That was in school. That wasn't your family.
No, my family's Presbyterian, and mother goes to church and all. Daddy used to, but I don't know. He got tired of it, and so they're Presbyterian, but they never to the extent, you know, they wouldn't much consider even going to a revival. It's kind of, to them, it's kind of suspect, you know.
Well, what is it? Sooner or later, you get to the silent stage. How is that? Well, you know, you never.
When I was in high school, I was in the church with the same kind of enthusiasm that people have for country music. They're not afraid of being enthusiastic about it. They like it, and they're willing to be loud about it. And just like then, I wasn't embarrassed by the minister calling people to the front to ask for salvation or to rededicate their lives. I wasn't embarrassed by it. In fact, I would even do it. And now, being away from it so long, I would just be embarrassed to death for the minister to even do it, much less do it myself. And it's just, I think it's just willing, being enthusiastic about something.
Well, now, are you just an onlooker down there and detached at home with the family down there?
Sometimes I feel like I'm that way, but most of the time I feel so much a part of it.
You do?
They've made me feel a part of it, I think, because the first night I ever met them, before Jim and I were even engaged, they acted like they were crazy about me, and they haven't changed since, you know? And
yeah.
Which is, and they just try to make me feel a part of the family.
Yeah.
And I do in a way, and of course in a way I don't. And this weekend I felt a little more like an onlooker, because his sister was there, you know? And because it was Thanksgiving, and I kind of miss my family, but that's about the main reason.
Well, how did his sister have to do with it?
Well, she's their daughter.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm a daughter-in-law, and there's a difference. I mean, they don't make it out and out. They didn't treat me any different this weekend they ever have. But to me, it was different because I knew that she was their daughter.
But you could still take a hold of
I was kind of mopey Thursday. Jim thought I wouldn't feel very good. But after that, because I like Betty, and I like the whole family, so I don't feel uncomfortable around. And I just take part with the rest of them.
They didn't even hold it against you that you came down there and dulled your mind so you couldn't get into the experience.
No, they felt sorry for me.
How about that?
And of course, they said, you sure you can't go with us shopping? And this was Saturday. They went down to Melbourne. I said, no, I've got to stay here and study. Jim kept asking me, he said, you sure you want to stay? I'll stay if you want me to stay. And I said, no, you go on. About 15 minutes before they left, I said, the heck was this? I'm coming. So I went down with them.
How'd you do?
Okay.
What all did you do?
Well, what I usually do on shopping trips, I just like to look at things.
Well, what they do?
They were looking for Christmas presents, and Betty just looked around. She said she couldn't get any ideas. She drove her little sister crazy because Faye always knows exactly what she's going to get for everybody. She's got all her Christmas presents bought for everybody. And she was buying presents. And so Betty went with Faye, and invariably we all end up in the toy department thinking, gee, Scotty'd like this. Scotty like that, and how'd Scotty like a drum? Every store we went into, we'd end up in the toy department. And that's where we'd spend most of the time in the store, in the toy department.
You know what?
Talking about Billy Graham and the world of country music. About our neighbors across the road when we lived in Kentucky. And they were Kentucky hill people from, and always been Round County folk. And Miss Brewer used to, I don't know, they took Don to the church with them a couple of times, and they never took me. See, they had a boy that a couple of years younger than Don. Don was with them all the time. And I remember Miss Brewer sitting out on the porch. She had a baby while we were out there, and it had brain damage. And she'd sit out in the front porch, and she'd sing to that baby. And she'd sing things like Little Horses and all these old country lullabies. And they took the baby. They kept going to doctors in Lexington, and that baby didn't get any better. So they took it to Billy Graham twice. And they pack up and go to wherever the nearest, his nearest revival was. And they get Don, I'd go over with Miss Cornett to collect the hen's eggs, and Don would help do the milking while they were gone. And they'd come back, and one time the baby was better. And the next time she wasn't. And eventually she died after a few months. But I can remember her packing off for those, go to those crusades. And the Brewers were about as country as you can get. I went over a couple of times to their grandparents. Over in the, on the Tar Flats, you remember the Tar Flats? Beyond Salt Lake. I think that's right. It's way back in the hills, but it's level country right around there. It's what is the hills level for a little bit. And that's the Tar Flats, ain't it?
Oh, yeah.
Great country.
Yeah.
Great, good farming country. And they, Mr. Brewer would occasionally set out tobacco seedlings over in the Tar Flats and then move them when they got big enough to his, back over to his farm, because all he had was mostly dairy and a couple of acres and tobacco. And I went over there to their grandparents' farm and to get tobacco seedlings a couple of times. And Harold used to just tell me the greatest tales about Thanksgiving or Sunday. No, it wasn't Thanksgiving. Heck, it was just Sunday dinners with at their grandparents. And Donald went once. And they had a heck of a huge dinner. And they had squirrel. The men had been out hunting. They had squirrel and coon and a couple of hens and corn, peas, all from the garden. And I think he said they had potatoes fixed six different ways and corn three different ways, and all the clan gathered around the long table for these Sunday dinners. And the Brewers always went over the Tar Flats on Sunday. Always. Finally, he sold his little place where we were and bought himself a real dairy farm out in the Tar Flats. I never had the honor of going to one of those dinners. But I would have liked to. I never got to. That was one of the things I was jealous of my brother for.
Just kind of, there's one. One song that is just like that, and this boy says, all I ever had was an old cold tater when there was chicken on the plate. And he was the youngest one and the littlest of the kids, and his mother would say, take a tater and wait while everybody else is chicken basket around. And the same type of, same thing, you know, dinner, where the whole family, and the families are big, like, I think Bue's the youngest of 5 or 6 boys. And another boy I went out, his father had 12 brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
They were from Kentucky.
This is the end of that nice little visit with Suzanne. Suzanne came out to ride and to talk and to report. Channel 2 over around 400. Channel 2 over around 400. Tuesday afternoon, the 2nd of December. 69. Tuesday afternoon, the 2nd of December, 69. This Channel 2 over, around 405. Suzanne came out to report from her Thanksgiving with Jim's family at the Cape.
I've been reading the book that Barbara gave me, and I was interested in the use of hands, for one thing, in controlling the horse. And Barbara showed me a few things while she was riding Pussy.
Mm. It's difficult to explain. That's why the book's not very very clear on it.
Yeah.
You can't put it into words. Because it ends up, all it ends up is a sort of a combination of things. And then in the book it says
gives all, lists all these rain aids and gives them fancy names like indirect rain of opposition and then at the end of it, it says that good horsemanship and equestrian tact is to combine the rein aids or use the one that works with the horse in question in the situation and et cetera, et cetera. And Bill Steinkraus, in his own book, refused to give any rein aids. He says, you find out what works, and if it works, cry for you.
That sounds like Johnny.
Bill Steinkraus is the stylist of this country. He's respected as one of the best riders in the world. And even, I mean, England, Germany, anywhere, you say Bill Steinkraus, and then nobody will say he's a bad rider. But his book is delightful. I think you had it, didn't you?
I had it. Sue has it.
Yeah. But then he takes such a matter-of-fact attitude toward it. He says, I'm not going to write a manual on horsemanship. If you want to read one, go read Sienisch, a German. He's the authority. And then he proceeds to just give tips, little things here and there that aren't in the manuals. Or at least you can't figure them out from the manuals because the manuals are so complicated. But on this rain thing, I just showed Faye what it looked like if you did it on a horse. And that's not much help either.
I mean, well, it is too.
Well,
you have to use it, I know, but
mm-hmm.
You can stop a horse without looking as if I stopped the horse. That's what I learned.
Pans. Me was Missy. Well, and Pussy, too. She woke up today. She had all sorts of brilliance today. A little bit of stupidity here and there, but all sorts of brilliance. And just about everything I wanted her to do after a little work, she did it. She was even taking her canter. Now, when I first started riding her and trying to get her to do the canter, she was terrible. But when I got her out there and was working, Missy was around, she'd take it just shifting weight a couple of times. I just shifted my weight, and away we went.
She did.
Yeah.
She did better with spurs, though.
Yeah, she had to, I worked her in figure eights a little bit with spurs. And at first, when I first went out there, I really had to let her have it. And then after a little bit of work, that was the best she's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Even with work, that's the best she's taken her leads. And she would take the correct one almost every time. She only got on the wrong one about twice, and that was my fault. So she knows the lead now. It's making sure that she goes into canter and doesn't trot. But Missy was the one.
Uh-huh.
What about Missy?
Well, Missy's so sensitive to weight. You can get Missy to walk or trot or canter just by how you use your back. You don't have to move your legs or your hands.
Well, that's inconceivable, Bob.
No, I've ridden horses like that before. That little Arabian, remember I said I used to ride an Arabian at Telks that taught me to ride a horse from behind and not use the hands? Well, she was like that. And that's what Missy is like. You can ride her and slow her and stop her and get her to go faster, all with your back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's extremely sensitive. She's very ticklish.
Mm-hmm.
And she feels the least little thing that happens to her. And the best thing I think that could be done with her would be to put her in a snaffle and just forget that she's got a mouth.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And eventually, when she's ready, when she's got the back muscle, she'll bring her head up.
Oh.
But right now, she can't. I can show you on a horse. I mean, if you look at Missy, you know how you say when you look down on her, you think she's got no neck at all?
That's right.
because she doesn't.
Uh-huh.
The top neck muscles, the ones that lie just below the crest, between
mm-hmm.
the crest and the shoulder,
mm-hmm.
are the ones that raise the head.
Mm-hmm.
And if they aren't developed,
mm-hmm.
the horse can't hold its head up.
Mm-hmm. This is what I know.
And Missy has none.
That's
I mean, she's
right.
just,
they're not developed.
They're hollow.
Mm-hmm.
And in a, well, even, well, Pussy's got very strong neck muscles.
Uh-huh.
Too strong. She's a bit bull-necked. And so is Molly.
Mm-hmm. But Missy needs this developed. You
yeah,
see, this is what I know.
Developed. And the best thing for that is lunge and side reins.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what happens is you can get them to bring their heads up and arch their neck and still have it wrong and not develop those neck muscles.
Mm-hmm. I know it.
Because I know you've seen saddle horses that look goosenecked.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted you to help her with, too.
Yeah. And that's what happens with a horse that gets goosenecked like that, is they're made before they're made to bring the head up without working on the hind legs. And Missy's so sensitive that there's no need for that to ever happen to her. Now, with a horse that's hard to get going like Pussy, it's easy to sort of pull the head up
uh-huh.
and forget the hind
mm-hmm.
legs. But with a horse like Missy that's so sensitive to weight and back, there's no need for that to ever happen to her.
Well, sensitive to it and also do what you want her to do.
Yeah, she'll do it. She's not stubborn or anything.
That's why we really have never pulled her head up.
Yeah. It's about 3 feet away, but
what?
Sometimes she jumps up in the air and lands about 3 feet away. She's
Missy?
Sensitive.
Missy?
Yeah. She doesn't like anything thrown around her or touching her sides or her flanks. I guess what I'll do is take her out and ride her through the weeds some more.
Well,
over
I can
in the cornfield.
I can do that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. That's the sort of thing I can do. What I can't do, like you can do,
I can do the rough work,
and I can even learn to lunge. But if you will do what you can do in a short time with that back, or you decide.
Lunging's the best thing for it. And riding her in a snaffle. She already tends to overbend.
Yeah.
Now, she'll bring her head, she'll tuck her nose into her chest.
Mm-hmm.
When you've used the bit, she'll drop behind it and tuck her nose into her chest. And you know that book?
Yeah.
Says it's rare?
Yeah.
I got news for him.
You're looking at it.
I got news for him. It is not rare.
Oh?
Almost every horse that's got any sensitive mouth at all can easily be made to overbend.
Mm-hmm.
Quite easily.
And her mouth is sensitive.
Yeah. It doesn't take much at all to get a horse to overbend.
Just a little fingertip.
So I guess with remounts, cavalry remounts were usually thoroughbred and cold blood crosses. And they weren't, as a rule, they weren't the most sensitive horses in the world. Good horses, but.
Maybe that's why he said that.
Yeah.
Channel 2 over, round 450. Channel 2 over. Round 5, 40, 45. Right after lunch, Faye and Barbara worked a little bit. Barbara showed Faye how to rein in one or two things. Barbara said she couldn't talk about reining. You just had to look at it. It's the reason the books couldn't do very well. So she talked about Missy and her neck muscles. That was interesting. A little horse talk. Right after lunch, before they went into town. On Wednesday, the 3rd of December, 69. Wednesday, the 3rd of December, 69. This is Channel 2 over, around 5:50. And this is still Channel 2 over, 5:50. And Wednesday after supper. Wednesday after supper, 3rd December, 69. 3rd December, 69. Wednesday after supper.
Condition of being with the horse is the keynote of riding.
Well, it's, you can't stay on a horse or any way you can, but it's not very comfortable to stay on a horse if you aren't balanced. And riding a horse is a lot like riding a bicycle or a motorcycle or something like that. And it's I know one book that gives marvelous diagrams and goes into the physics of it, of it all. And has all these cute little things that show where the rider, the center of weight of a rider's weight is, and where the center of a horse's weight is, through all the different gates. And the whole theory of Caprilli, forward seat, the army military seat, which when taught in the nowadays is called a balance seat. The French school, and also dressage, is that the rider's weight, center of equilibrium, should be the same as the horse's. And the horse carries his weight either on, he can carry it either mostly on his hind legs. Extreme case would be when he's rearing, when his 4 feet are actually off the ground. Or evenly on all 4 feet, or on his forehand. And when he's galloping or running, that's an extreme case of when he's got all of his weight on his forehand. Anytime a horse is going fast and is extended, his weight moves forward onto his forehand. He carries it on his front feet and frees his hind legs, and all they do is push. They don't carry the weight. And rider has to take that into account according to the balanced seat. Now, in Western riding, they don't do that. They don't do it as much, in the same way, I don't know. What he's talking about there, he's describing the military seat, and he says that the rider should ride, for instance, at the walk, should sit upright. And his center, idea is that the line of balance should be just as if he was standing on the ground, and you pick him up and you put him on a horse. And if you would take the horse out from under him again, he'd be standing on the ground. That's the only difference. And when the horse walks, as a rule, he carries his weight evenly distributed, and the point where, if you were going to pick him up, balance him on a rope, you know, run it under him and just pick him up and balance him, it would run just behind the withers, just slightly behind the withers, approximately where the back of the girth is. Not the front of it, but the back. That's about 6 inches behind the withers. That's where you put your rope to balance him at a walk. And at a trot, it's the same. It might shift back. If it's a collected trot, it might shift back slightly. Now, the same if it's a collected walk, it'll shift back. Mm-hmm. And the horse will carry more weight on his hind legs. Instead of just pushing with his hind legs, he'll actually carry some weight on them. And when he canters, in a collected canter, the weight, the center is the same. So in all three, walk, trot, and canter, as long as you're just doing it on level ground as a school movement, and the horse is fairly collected, your position would be the same. Your position would not change. Now, if you're going to extend the horse,
and allow him to carry his weight on his forehand. Then the body must shift as the horse, more weight he gets on his forehand, the more you must shift to the forehand as well,
mm-hmm.
or you'll be left behind the horse.
Oh, that's what you mean by then you'll
being behind the horse is actually being behind the center of balance of the horse.
Mm-hmm.
Literally behind him, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like he's going to run away from you. He might not be going any faster, but he'll feel like he's going to run away from you.
That's what he means, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because you've gotten behind him and he's leaving you behind. Momentum just keeps him going a little faster than you do. You can get ahead of a horse. I get ahead of my horses. And it's easy to do. All you've got to do is lean forward more than the horse's center of balance is shifted. It's especially easy to do going into canter, trying to get a canter from a trot,
mm-hmm.
or when you're doing a rising trot. A rising trot is a test
mm-hmm.
of whether you're forward, before or behind the horse. You can rise out of the saddle and stay at the top of the rise.
That's what he said.
Just stay there without any effort, and there's no effort in it. It's not tiring at all once you've learned how to do it. Then you're in balance. You're exactly with the horse. And when you sit down, you'll still be in balance because rising is not so much, well, they used to teach it leaning forward and all this sort of
mm-hmm.
stuff. And you do shift the shoulders forward a little bit, but you also have to push your feet out behind you so that your center of balance stays the same. You just simply fold up a little bit when you rise and sit. Whereas, see, these kids try it, and they straighten the knee and don't fold, and then they'll either get behind or before. Whichever way they're off, they'll find it out quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are behind at the trot, and that's when you'll see them all of a sudden sit down with their legs in front of them, and the horse looks startled. Because when they try to get up and stay up, the horse moves out from under them, and they aren't with it. And they'll fall because their legs are going with the horse. Their legs are against the horse's side. And they aren't. And when the horse moves forward, they'll just sit down like you've moved the ground out from under them.
Yeah.
And if they're too far to the forward, most of them will pivot on their knee and practically fall on the horse's neck.
Now, have you done all that stuff?
Yeah, I've done it myself. Sure. I'm not always with my horses, even now. Quite frequently not with Pussy.
Oh.
And see, when I'm trying to get her into a canter, I make the mistake I've always made. I lean forward, and
mm-hmm.
I get ahead of her.
Mm-hmm.
I would practically sometimes feel like I'm about to end up on her neck. I'm so far ahead of her because she's not moving, and I'm
mm-hmm.
in the effort of trying to get her to move. You get further and further in front of the horse.
What I did with her today, when I didn't have a crop or anything.
When you don't have a crop, and that's when you start forgetting to use your back and ride the horse from behind. Is when a horse is sluggish like that, you get left behind with Missy because she'll go right out from under you. But you never get left behind with Pussy, but you sure will get ahead of her. Because you've got to be thinking, I mean, you have to have a feel for how fast you're going to go. You can influence the horse, and I've done this with even not sensitive horses. I've done it with Pussy, who I wouldn't consider very sensitive about weight, body age. And you'd be going along, and you want to rate the trot, and instead of doing anything, you just start counting to yourself, and you count just a little bit slower than the horse is going. And pretty soon the horse will match your count. and he will go slower. It's not just that you've speeded up your count a little bit to thin to match the horse unconsciously. He's slowed down. You haven't done a thing. But what it is, and I've noticed what it is very slightly, for instance, I'm doing a rising trot. Very slightly, I'll time my rise.
Mm-hmm.
So that it slows her just a little bit. That shift in weight can slow her just a little bit. But if you think about it, you do it too much. In other words, if instead of thinking, counting slowly, more slowly to myself, I were to try to time my rise and think of rising slower, I'd fail.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'd do it too much. I'd go too slowly or get off out of rhythm with her. Instead of just that slight little bit that'll make her come back to me, I'd get out of rhythm with her and be left behind or something like that. Because I'd get out of balance. But by thinking it, I can stay in balance with it and keep with the momentum of it and yet slow it down just a little bit.
How about that for you?
Well, this is real interesting. And this is what from the book, too, what she has said about Missy and being sensitive to weight.
This morning.
Yeah.
Missy's being sensitive to weight is something it's not anything to do with training or anything. It's natural.
Natural. Mm-hmm.
She's just that. She's sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
What it is, though, is you see, she can feel just the slightest thing, shift in weight. If you get behind on Missy, and this is true with most any sensitive horse, if you get behind on them, they'll run.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you get behind a horse, you start hitting them hard on the back. Can't help it, that's just what happens. Because what happens is that your weight's gone back. Usually the result when you get behind a horse is for your leg to go out in front of you and your weight to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes you sit down hard. Every time the horse moves, trotting or cantering, anything where there's a little bit of bounce, you hit them twice as hard. And a horse's reaction to anything that pains them is to run.
Oh.
And that'll upset that'll upset a sensitive horse. Now, if you were to get ahead of Missy, she'd stop dead.
Right?
If you get ahead of her, she'll stop. Well, so will Pussy. That's why it's so doggone stupid for me to get ahead of her, and that's why I can't get any results from her when I do. It's true of any horse. You get ahead of them, they'll stop. And that's how many a rider has ended up going over the head of a horse, by getting ahead of them, and the horse will stop.
Mm-hmm.
It's just simple.
Mm-hmm.
All you gotta do is try it once or twice. We'll keep on going no matter what at the same pace. But
now Mrs. Gale changed with your a slight shift in weight.
Yes, because she's so sensitive. Now you can, that has to be deliberate.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't have to be deliberate,
well,
but
deliberate.
It is.
You can use it.
You can use it. You can use just the lower back and. A rider has to be just as supple as a horse. That's why all the gymnastics and stuff that I do. I have to be able to use not just a leg or an arm or a finger, but my hips separately. Use the left one or the right one or both together. And what it amounts to is using your hips from the waist, just from the waist down. None of this can involve the shoulders because that's too much change in weight. If you involve the shoulders, you throw your whole body out of line.
and you get out from the horse. I mean, you can get off to the right, and the horse will be going off to the left, and it's too bad. But you've got to be able to use just from the waist down, and just like it's pushing a child's, you know, when you're swinging, how you can use your back. You use your back to push, and then relax it again when you're coming back. Mm-hmm. That's the same thing with the horse. The same muscles involved. And now with Misty, for instance, all you got to do to get her into a canter is to have your inside leg on the girth and move the outside one back an inch, and then just with the inside hip, just give a push, and she'll go right into it. She may not be on the right lead, but she'll go right into the canter.
Yeah.
And
she'll be on the right lead if you do it the other way.
Well, that has nothing to do with the dip.
Yeah, I know. Uh-huh.
Nothing to do with the dip.
That's right.
Now, she should be looking in the direction she's going, because her spine should be bent in that direction. But that doesn't have, that's neither here nor there as far as her the influence of weight on her concerned. You can get her into a trot by using just sitting in with the back, just pushing the stomach out, and that pushes the pelvis down, and that'll be enough to put her into a trot. And you can slow her down the same way, exactly the same signal you give her to make her go faster. The only difference is that instead of letting her go faster, you fix the hand so that when she tries to go faster, see, when a horse tries to go faster, they stretch their necks out a little. And when she stretches the neck out a little, if you fix her hand so that she meets the bit, then she'll stop. Hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
She will if her jaw is relaxed and she's accepting the bit. But see, if the rider is not with the horse, and he tries something like that, either the signal will be too exaggerated, and the horse will go bombing off and leave him in the dust, or less spectacular results, but just as awkward for the rider. Just give him a rough ride and not do what he wants. Or the horse will simply not pay any attention to him, depending on the nature of the horse.
How can you
Oh, no, that's another problem. She has poor neck muscles because she never bothers to hold her head up. And when she does hold her head up, she usually breaks what they call breaking the neck.
Mm-hmm.
It's when the horse bends too much at the pole without arching the whole neck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's simply a matter of training. That no horse will develop, well, I better not say it that way, because Pussy and Molly obviously have. Most horses of fine breeding, such as standard breds, thoroughbreds, all these narrow horses, will not develop a good neck unless they've gotten the proper exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them will do it naturally. Will hold, have natural head carriage, what Mr. Daly calls presence.
Presence, yes.
And
that's actually what Molly has.
Yes, she does. She's got presence.
Uh-huh.
And he had a quarter horse that had it, and oh boy, was he was vain. But,
yeah.
But that's part of it. But he was king of whatever ground he walked on too. Mm.
It's the end of Channel 2 Over. The end of Channel 2 Over. It's after supper, the Wednesday, the 3rd of December, 69. After supper, the 3rd of December, 69. The end of Channel 2 Over. The end of the...